This is because the odic force released by those present is not yet powerful enough, and particularly because the odic force of the developing medium is still in its initial stage. Practice in writing will progressively strengthen this power. If the workings of the spirit world are manifested in this or in some other way, the great obstacle originating in the tension of those present will make itself felt. They usually watch with curiosity and the greatest attentiveness what is happening to the other person. Tense expectancy, however, always holds back the odic radiation of a person, just as someone who is listening intently involuntarily holds his breath. This diminishes the odic current and makes the work of the spirits more difficult, for even the best engineer cannot make his engine run if the current is turned off or significantly diminished. Fear, fright, distrust, doubt and all other forms of inward opposition exert upon the odic current an effect as unfavorable as that produced by 117. Mental tension. Whoever harbors such feelings and takes part in a spiritistic meeting not only fails to release any odic force himself, but hampers and interrupts the odic current of the others. Hence mediums can tell at once when there is someone present who has the effect of a foreign body that cuts off the current, and they are justified in demanding the exclusion of such a person until he has adopted a different mental attitude. Whenever, therefore, at spiritistic gatherings, there is a lack of harmony in feelings and beliefs, there can be no homogeneous odic current, and the successful outcome is questionable, or even impossible. This explains why scientific committees that experiment with mediums often meet with little or no success. The mediums, who, as we know, are the sources of power for the manifestations of the spirit beings, feel frightened and intimidated, surrounded by an atmosphere of distrust. They realize all the while that their investigators consider them capable of committing fraud and that they have no faith in the thing itself. Feelings of this kind are bound to reduce the medium's release of energy, if not prevent it altogether. That is a law of nature, and it is the same law of nature that makes the blood drain from the cheeks of a person seized with fear, making him turn pale. What happens is that the person's odd is concentrated inward, drawing the blood to his heart. The blood follows the force of the odd according to a natural law, because it is the conductor of the odd in the body. How unjustly your scientists so often judge a medium's failure to meet their tests. They would do better to consider the obstacles often placed in the way of the mediums, the sources of power for the spirit world, by the scientists themselves. They should remove these obstacles. Then they would obtain a satisfactory demonstration of the ability of spirits to make themselves manifest. It is true that the good spirit world very rarely engages in communications that do not deal exclusively with the purposes of good, but serve merely to satisfy scientific inquiry, if not, indeed, sheer curiosity. That is the province in which the low spirit world is eagerly active and where it, unfortunately, only too often causes a great deal of harm. Those who attend good spiritistic gatherings should repeatedly be reminded to banish all doubt and distrust from their hearts and to await what may happen with the utmost patience and composure. Whenever a participant in a séance feels an inner impulse to write down a thought with which he is inspired, he should do so. In time he will. 118. Learn to distinguish between his own thoughts and those that are inspired. For the thoughts instilled by the spirit world will force themselves upon you insistently as you try to dismiss your own, and they will keep on recurring if you disregard them. Should anyone present feel a numbness in his head or a striking heaviness in his limbs, should his head be turned from side to side or his body perform motions inexplicable to him, that is a sign that the spirit world is working on him. Most greatly impaired are the bodies of people who become deep trance mediums. The back and forth movement, the up and down contortions of the body are connected with releasing the spirit of the developing medium from his body and from his corporeal odd. The physical symptoms attending the releasing of a spirit are often frightening to those who witness them, for they resemble a death struggle, although without any pain to the medium. There is, however, no cause for alarm, for everything happens according to established laws. The most difficult period of a deep trance medium's development is the stage of what is known as semi-trance or partial trance. His own spirit has not yet been completely released and left his body, while a foreign spirit is already using the body of the medium for its manifestations. The medium's spirit, still present, hears the words spoken through the medium by the foreign spirit, and this can easily lead the medium to believe that the words and thoughts uttered are his own. He is thus in danger of misunderstanding the entire proceeding and of regarding the manifestations as so much self-deception. In this stage of development, it may easily happen that the medium's own spirit butts into the communications being delivered by the foreign spirit, which raises legitimate doubts among the others present. It might seem at first glance that the foreign spirit would do better to hold off with its messages until the medium's development is complete, thereby avoiding inconveniences like those described, but the reasons that impel the foreign spirit to communicate through a medium who has reached only the partial trance stage are so important, that it will sooner accept the described inconveniences than postpone its communications until the medium has completed his development. For it is precisely during the early stages, when no fully trained medium is available to the participants, that they require instruction and explanation on so many points that this instruction cannot well be postponed until later. So much of inner benefit to the participants depends on this instruction, especially at the beginning, that the imperfect manner in which the messages are transmitted must be 119. Regarded as a much smaller evil than a total neglect of such instruction would be. The transition from the partial trance to the deep trance stage is generally of relatively short duration provided that the medium takes pains to progress inwardly and to reduce his human failings. As soon as he has reached the full trance stage, the medium is entirely unaware of what the foreign spirit is saying or doing. The most serious obstacles and difficulties are put by the evil spirit world in the way of all those who seek to communicate with the beyond in the good sense, for in this case, as in all others, evil wants to prevent the accomplishment of good. It neglects no means of trying to divert the seekers from their purpose, beginning by instilling into them, and especially into the developing medium, the idea that it is all self-deception, auto-suggestion or hypnosis, and doing its best to dissuade them from engaging in such matters, which will expose them to ridicule. The evil ones will have accomplished much if they succeed in arousing serious doubts in one person or another as to the truth, genuineness and worth of the matter. For this purpose they also often exploit the most superficial pretexts, especially minor errors and shortcomings, which are bound to happen as long as human frailty is involved. The evil spirit world likewise tries to frighten those being developed as clairvoyants, by showing them the most abhorrent monstrosities, grotesque devil's faces and similar images, in order to induce them thereby to discontinue their development and to abandon the cause. Naturally, people who devote themselves to a low form of spiritism are spared these challenges. This is easy to explain, for low spiritism is the connecting link with evil, so evil has no reason to hold people back from pursuing it. When the evil spirits are at work, this is a time of testing for the participants, and above all for the mediums. Everyone undergoes a special test, and always at his weakest point. Only those who can meet this test will receive the mediumistic gifts. Those who fail will either abandon their search altogether, or fall wholly under the sway of the evil spirit world. Therefore, everyone should pray for help and strength, so that they will successfully resist the temptations of the evil spirits. As for the duration of the seances, they should not be unduly prolonged. Generally speaking, 1 hour should be enough. As soon as spirits manifest themselves through mediums, they usually decide when they're. 120. Meeting should be adjourned. For God is a God of order, and His spirits are spirits of order. This is also made evident in such a wondrous way at those meetings that are held under God's protection, in that there is always a controlling spirit that directs everything. It decides what the participants must do to facilitate the development of the mediums and tells them how to work on their own inner progress, what faults to correct and what virtues to cultivate. The controlling spirit often decides upon the passages to be read from the Holy Writ at the beginning of the seance and occasionally alters the order of seating of the participants as may be required for obtaining an increase of odic energy. It furthermore determines what spirits are to be admitted into the mediums, the nature of the messages they may deliver and how long they may stay in the medium. It may also admit evil spirits into the medium, so that the other persons present shall come to know such spirits by their dispositions and actions, and thereby acquire practical experience in how to behave in their presence. The controlling spirit is especially pleased to admit into the medium's spirits that are in deep distress but whose intentions are fairly good, in order to give these spirits an opportunity to be taught and directed to turn to God by those present. This is a great act of brotherly love that those in attendance at such meetings can do for their suffering brethren in the beyond. Sometimes the controlling spirit will later explain its reasons for admitting the various spirits. The controlling spirit is the first of the spirits to arrive at each seance, and it always comes with a greeting that makes reference to God. It is the spiritual guide of the participants, whom it admonishes, warns, criticizes and instructs. In particular, both during the medium's development and afterwards, it emphasizes the need for an ever greater belief and trust in God. The closer a person inwardly comes to God, the greater is his share in the power that emanates from him, and the greater and more wonderful the gifts that God bestows upon him for the benefit of his fellow men. Thus the aim of every seance in which God's spirits are active is, "Nearer my God to thee." In the early stages of the medium's education, when the first written messages from the beyond are received, it is usually your departed kin and friends who obtain permission to communicate with you, provided that they themselves are on the road to God in the beyond and are not among the evil spirits. They too will earnestly exhort you to believe in God, and will not weary of telling you that in communicating with the good spirits, you have chosen the right path. They also often express their regret that this path was not pointed out to them while they were living on earth. 121. As the development makes further progress, the messages from departed relatives and friends cease entirely, and high spirit beings make themselves manifest. This, however, presupposes that the participants work at improving themselves inwardly and that they are of good will. If a participant is lacking in goodwill or loses it, and if he fails to heed repeated admonitions addressed to him by the good spirits, he will be excluded from future gatherings by order of the controlling spirit. This is necessary, not only because he himself is making no progress, but because he is an obstacle for the rest, forming, as he does, a rallying point for the evil spirits. They follow him to the seance and exert their bad influence also upon the others present in the most various ways. Furthermore, the odic force is adversely affected by the discord that he introduces into the assembly as a result of his inner attitude. Gatherings held for the purpose of communicating with the spirit world that do not take place under the supervision of one of God's spirits do not enjoy his blessing. Even if they have all the external features of a divine service, the direction spirit communication takes under these conditions is not toward God. They contribute nothing toward the purification and upliftment of the soul. Wherever the divinely appointed control is lacking, that is not the place for the spirits assigned to the service of those who seek salvation. Salvation of the souls of the participants is the only purpose of spiritistic meetings. Therefore, although in many of the so-called spiritist churches of today the meetings take place within a framework of prayer and hymns, the real object of what takes place there is far removed from serving any divine ends. Those acting as leaders or co-workers in these churches are generally gifted with clairvoyance, clairaudience and clairsentience, and through these gifts they are able to communicate with the spirits that accompany the participants at the gatherings. The odic radiation of these spirits establishes contact with that of the mediums, male and female, serving these churches. It not only communicates to them a personality profile of the spirits present and of their relationships to the people they are accompanying, but enables them to receive the messages brought by the spirits in the interest of their friends among the living. The chief feature of these church assemblies is the delivery of spirit messages relating almost exclusively to the worldly fortunes, concerns, and material progress of the participants. They look upon such churches as information bureaus, where, on payment of a certain admission fee, they can 122. Learn something about their own worldly futures from the spirits of departed friends or relatives, through the clairvoyants working with the church. Because of this, the leaders of churches of this type are careful to see to it that no visitor leaves the service without having received such a message. Inasmuch as God's spirits keep away from meetings of this type and, hence, exercise no control over them, the low spirit world is left free to do as it pleases. Even if the spirits that come and go are not necessarily evil, it is a type of spirit communication that is of little benefit to a person's soul. If it should happen further that the clairvoyants who perform at these churches are also part trance mediums, they are like open windows through which the low spirit world can enter at will, since there is no controlling spirit on hand to keep them out or to maintain order. Hence the spirit messages are jumbled together in a fashion that cannot fail to put people off. This is bound to reflect most unfavorably on good, divinely sanctioned spirit communication in the judgment of people who are often complete novices in this domain. Because of the religious cast given to the services at these churches, the impression is created that the spiritism practiced there is of the kind that is pleasing to God. The leaders of these churches therefore have a great responsibility before God for anything that happens at their meetings. It is their duty to devote their gifts entirely to the service of God, unselfishly and regardless of worldly considerations. They must pray for spirit control, which will gladly be granted them. Having received it, they must obey it fully. If they do this, their meetings will become real divine services and will serve the enlightenment and the spiritual welfare of the participants, for then the high spirit world will become active and the low spirits will be denied access. If the meetings are held as I have just instructed you, they will bring you great blessings, much joy and true peace of the heart. Every meeting is to be closed with a brief prayer of thanksgiving spoken by the presiding member and, where possible, with a song. The development of a medium and other communication with the good spirit world may, however, also take place in other ways than at communal seances. Any individual may, alone, devote a specific time, such as half an hour or even less, to inner composure every day, or several times a week. He, or she, proceeds in the same manner as what I have described for group seances. He begins with a brief prayer, reads a passage from the Holy Writ and reflects upon it. Thereupon he takes a pencil and lays his hand on a sheet of paper lying before him, and waits patiently, completely relaxed. If he is pressed to write down thoughts that are very 123. Insistently urged upon him, he should commit them to paper. If his hand is set in motion by an external force, he should yield to it. At the end of the time the individual has allotted to this private divine service, he should conclude with a prayer. He may rest assured that from the first moment he seeks contact with the good spirit world, it will begin its work on him and create all the conditions necessary for such contact. In fact, this work begins as soon as a person turns his thoughts seriously to this subject. It often happens that mediumistically gifted individuals experience what is to them an inexplicable sensation during the first serious conversation they engage in about the spirit world and its contact with mankind. This sensation arises from the fact that the spirits of the beyond, some of whom are always hovering about, immediately begin to exert their influence on them, as they, because of their mediumistic predisposition, are highly susceptible to any odic action on the part of the spirit world. Until a person knows at least something of the possibility of communicating with the spirit world, it would serve no purpose for the spirits about him to begin to work on him. Not only that, but it might have very unpleasant earthly consequences, for neither he nor his relatives would be capable of understanding the mediumistic symptoms that he was developing. He would be thought to be suffering from some nervous disorder and would be put under the care of a physician or sent to a sanatorium. Hence the good spirit world begins its work only when there is some prospect of success, not otherwise. At the conclusion of these teachings, I want to answer a question which many people ask, and rightly so: does spiritism have a detrimental effect on the health of mediums or of those who attend spiritistic seances? My answer to this is, no dash and yes. If a meeting at which spirits appear is held under God's auspices, if everything done at that meeting is done in His name, if you put yourselves under His protection, and if you love Him and seek only what is good, contact with the spirit world can never harm you. On the contrary, you will be strengthened physically and spiritually, especially the mediums. Sleep, which you require to refresh you, is not needed by mediums while they are in deep trance. This, of course, holds true only provided you are serving the good cause and send the evil spirits away. As long as mediums are in a state of trance, their bodies are resting and are thereby invigorated. Even though we, the good spirits, may be at work on them or through them, they are in no way harmed. On the contrary, they enjoy physical repose, as I said, and feel better at the end of a seance than they felt before it. The odic energy taken from the mediums and other participants at a seance is replaced by the good. 124. Spirit world with fresh odd. Furthermore, during a medium's development, any inner afflictions that might interfere with or prevent the trance state are removed by the good spirit world, so that that individual is in a better state of health after being developed as a deep trance medium than before. On the other hand, spiritism is certainly harmful if God is disregarded in its pursuit, if everything is done under the influence of evil, and you even find amusement in evil and neglect prayer. In this case, you gradually fall into evil ways. This is so awful not only because you are led by the evil spirits to stray from the path of truth and righteousness, but because you suffer serious bodily harm. The odic force taken from you by those spirits is not replaced. As a result, the health of all participants and particularly that of the mediums is greatly impaired and, in time, utterly ruined. There is, therefore, a grain of truth in the popular belief that he who makes a pact with the devil must sacrifice his own life, for his odic force is gradually sapped by evil and his body loses its power to sustain life. Many mediums who engage in the lower forms of spiritism suffer a mental and physical breakdown. Some end up in insane asylums or commit suicide. Spiritism is therefore harmful and dangerous only if it is pursued not for the sake of learning the divine truth and of growing inwardly, but merely to satisfy curiosity and a craving for extraordinary experiences, or to obtain information relating to material affairs or of purely scientific interest. Therefore, most seriously warn your fellow man against participating in spirit communication that serves no higher ends. Teach them about spirit communication of a good, divinely sanctioned nature, for this should be practiced by everyone. It is your only way to the truth, and the shortest way to God. Even those who have not yet found their way to a belief in God should practice spiritism in its good form, if they have honestly resolved to accept the truth as soon as it is convincingly presented to them. Truth seekers who follow this path in such a frame of mind will find the truth and the freedom that is the heritage of the children of God. They will come to know the true meaning of religion. It was about them that Christ said, "Seek and you will find." Those who have not yet come to believe in God should nevertheless pray to Him, if only conditionally. They may adapt their prayer to their current state of mind. The following prayer can be spoken by any unbeliever whose intention is good and who is ready to accept the truth. O God, if it is true that you exist, I pray to you with all my heart to let me come to know you. Show me the truth and guide me on the right path. Amen. 125. His prayer will surely be granted, for God is merciful to all who are of good will. What particular religious denomination a person may belong to has no bearing whatever upon his attendance at good spiritistic meetings. 126. Biblical accounts of mediums and schools for mediums. I raised up some of your sons as prophets and some of your young men to be dedicated to God. Amos 2, 11. To the people of today, the idea of the possibility of communication between spirits and mankind seems strange and new. This is because you read the Bible only superficially and do not reflect upon its teachings. If you did, you would have to ask yourselves, as you read what is reported there, how did all these things happen? How were they brought about? What am I to think of them? How am I to explain them? Seeing that even the opening passages of the Bible relate that God conversed with mortals, that he spoke with Adam and Eve, with Cain and Abel, with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and Moses, you, as rational beings, should at least make the attempt to understand the process by which this was done. Those to whom God's spirits spoke back then were human beings like you. They had their sins and shortcomings, as you have yours. The laws of nature that governed their lives on earth were the same as those that govern yours. God and God's spirit world are also the same today as they were then. And when you read further and find that there was daily communication between the people of Israel and the spirit realm of the beyond, that every man could ask counsel of God and receive an answer, that the leaders of the people undertook nothing without the advice of the good spirit world, then your own common sense should tell you that communication with the spirit world is possible. And if it is possible, and was maintained for thousands of years by mankind in the past, why should it be denied to the people of today? You seem to believe that it rests entirely with the spirit world whether or not it will communicate with you, and that it can, of its own accord and at its own will, bring about such contact, without your cooperation. You seem to think that the spirits are free to visit mankind any time they want, and that all people have to do is to admit the spirits and to listen to what messages the spirit world may bring. And since you see no evidence today of the spirit communication of old, which plays such an important role in the Bible, you have come to the conclusion that the beyond has ceased communication with the world of the living once and for all. This is an unfortunate mistake. On the contrary, the good spirit world longs to come to you today and is ready to cross the bridge leading from the hereafter to the here, but you must help to build that bridge. In the past. 127. Also, mankind on its part had to fulfill all the conditions required to enable the spirit world to communicate with it. The peoples of old were familiar with these conditions, and observed them accordingly. Today when you read in the Bible the description of the phenomena that accompanied the manifestations of spirits, you think that these phenomena were mere external trappings, having no connection with the spirit communications themselves. Do you honestly believe that it was nothing more than game playing and unnecessary outward affectation when the angel of the Lord spoke to Moses from the burning bush and to the Israelites from the pillar of cloud, that he could have made himself understood without the flame and the pillar of cloud? Do you perhaps think that God was joking when he said to Moses, "I shall make the cloud thicker, so that all of the people can hear me when I speak to you," that he could have increased the volume of his voice without thickening the cloud of cloud? Or do you believe that the great cloud that settled upon Mount Sinai amidst thunder and the sound of trumpets was merely outward show, and that the thunder and the sound of trumpets could have been produced without the cloud? And when David asked Abiathar, the priest, to bring him the ephod with the breastplate of judgment because he wanted to consult God and receive his answer, was the breastplate of judgment only game playing too? Or were the flames in the thorn bush, the pillar of cloud, the breastplate of judgment, and the other things you come across in the Bible when you read about the communication of the spirit world with mankind, not rather the absolutely essential conductors for the telephone conversations from the hereafter to the here? Indeed, they constituted the bridge over which God's spirits traveled to reach the people of those times. Without that bridge, they could not have come. The material contributed by terrestrial beings was theodic force, and it became visible to everyone, in the shape of a flame in the burning bush, and as a cloud of cloud in the case of the pillar of cloud. In the same way odic force was required for constructing the material form of the many spirit materializations in those days. A sufficient amount of that same force had to be available to those spirits that indicated the letters on the breastplate of judgment that formed the sentences constituting the answers sent from the beyond. The sources of odic force for the spirit communications recorded in the Bible were, just as they are today, the mediums. In the writings of the Old Testament you find a great deal written of prophets and prophet schools. What do you think is meant by that? 2. 128. You believe perhaps that the gift of prophecy can be learned at school, in the same way that a worldly scientific education is acquired? In your modern parlance, you use the word prophet to designate a person who can foretell the future, and according to that definition, it would be natural to assume that it was possible at the ancient prophet schools to acquire the ability to predict future events. That is a misconception of the meaning of the terms prophet and prophet schools as used in the Bible.